Thanks, Ian, and thanks for having me along, and thanks for sticking around on a Friday afternoon. Yes, I'm an escapee from academia, but I think it's a pity, to be honest, that policy hasn't paid far more attention to some of the foundational principles that should have driven our recent policy agenda. I'm in a vanishingly small subset of two Venn diagrams. I really, really, really think that complementary measures are important. I really think that we massively overestimate the power of price in changing behaviour. And I really think that a well-designed set of complementary policies is central to tackling climate change. Circle number one. Circle number two. I really, really hate watching billions of dollars wasted on shit that's not going to work. It makes me angry. It not only makes me angry because it doesn't work and because idiots support it, but because it makes it harder to get good policies up in the future. Putting my political hat on, the problem is we've backed so many failures, as I'm sure Tristan is going to give us chapter and verse on, we, as in people interested in climate change who think that price isn't everything, have backed so many failures that we've got no credibility, frankly. That places me in this tiny little overlapping Venn diagram of wishing that complementary measures were well designed, wishing that we were doing it well, yet raging against a lot of what I think is completely pointless or just very inexpensive and ineffective policy. And think about all the people who at the time said that we shouldn't be critical, for example, of the rollout of the insulation in roof schemes because it was well-intentioned. No, it was killing people. It burnt houses down. It was wasting enormous amounts of money. It was being defrauded. And I was, quote, off message for being critical of it. So anyway, I don't know which of the two circles, if either, you're in, but there aren't many people that live in my little world of pain, because all the greenies hate me and none of the economists take me seriously. So anyway, I shall press on. There's a couple of papers that we've written that should be of interest if you think this stuff's important. One was a recent paper we wrote called Complementary or Contradictory, an Evaluation of Complementary Measures. The main point we made in that is if you're spending $15 billion a year subsidising the use of fossil fuels, you're probably not trying to get least cost abatement. It's real rocket science, isn't it? If you're serious about tackling climate change at least cost, the obvious first step, and I mean first step, I mean forget your fancy carbon price, the obvious first step is to stop paying people to do the thing you want them to stop. So I just don't take anyone that talks about least cost abatement seriously unless they're as angry as I am about perverse incentives or what I now call contradictory policies. Because we've simultaneously introduced a carbon price which is smaller than the price we pay them. All right, we spend about $15 billion a year. We spend that subsidising the use of fossil fuels. We only collect 10 to 12 from them on the carbon price. So, you know, first step one to complementary policies, stop doing harm. Another paper we wrote, Zero-Sum Game, the human dimension of emissions trading, which really focused on the need for intrinsic motivations in a well-designed scheme. Again, in that little overlapping Venn diagram of hell, I ran around for quite some time trying to explain to people that that once you've got an emissions trading scheme, a whole bunch of voluntary actions won't actually reduce the national level of emissions. It'll simply transfer the burden from one group to another. And I was simultaneously, gee, I'm talking about myself a lot this afternoon, sorry, I'm venting. I was simultaneously criticised by Penny Wong for lying and not understanding and Lenore Taylor for stating the bleeding obvious. Again, I guess the point I'm trying to make is if you're interested in complementary policies, it's a really contested space and you need to understand, I think, that contest. Another little paper we wrote, one I'm quite proud of, on green jobs, which just asks the question, basically, what the hell's a green job? Happy to talk more about that. But for a while there, you could get pretty much any policy you want up in Australia if you told someone it would create green jobs. I'm not sure that was some of our proudest policy development. Now, got a couple of principal questions to ask you. The first one is, you've got to understand there's a trade-off between the pursuit of least cost abatement and the pursuit of a transformed energy sector and a low-carbon economy. All right, if you want the transformational stuff, it's not least cost. If you want the least cost stuff, it's not transformational. And the problem is, most people I know want least cost transformational. Well, I'm glad someone laughed, because most people don't get it. I'm serious. Most people, most big environment groups in Australia, certainly everyone involved in politics, agrees with, yes, we need least cost abatement, and yes, we want to transform to a low carbon economy. Well, sorry, do you want to import offsets and do lots of stuff under things like CFI, or do you want to spend billions on wind and solar? Because all of the offsets mean you can keep burning a lot of coal and offset it, least cost. And all of the transformational stuff says shut the power stations down and build shiny new ones. Transformational. Least cost is not transformational, and transformational is not least cost. So again, if you want to know what kind of complementary policies you want, you better know which objective you've got. And we need to be honest with ourselves about what it is we're trying to achieve. Because there's a lot of people out there using words to conceal that they're either unsure about or don't want to admit to what their real priorities are. And just a nice reality check. In New South Wales, we're planning to spend more money on upgrading the grid than the nation is planning to spend on renewable energy. Now, someone's betting we're going to use a lot more energy to make the grid that much bigger, yet we think because we're introducing a carbon price, we're going to drive down demand. Well, someone's getting it completely wrong. Another big policy issue, again, if you're going to be clear about complementary policies, another big policy choice you need to make is, are you interested in mitigation or are you interested in adaptation? Because increasingly people are talking to me about co-benefits and things that seem to be all about adaptation, 5 minutes, rather than mitigation. Now, that's fine, but again, if we're not clear about what we're trying to achieve, and there's no way we're going to have well-designed policy. Now, I'll give you an example of just how badly designed the whole structure of Australian climate policy is. If you think about mitigation and think about adaptation, we've said, well, the Commonwealth government should be involved in mitigation and the state government should be involved in adaptation. Okay? Commonwealth does mitigation, states do adaptation. Mitigation, like a carbon price, raises all the money. Adaptation costs all the money. The state governments agreed to a structure in which the Commonwealth should take responsibility for mitigation, and then they will accept responsibility for adaptation. What that means is that the politics of getting mitigation up is the less mitigation you do, the happier people are, basically, and the more compensation you give away, the happier people are. So how much money is left out of that $10 billion we're going to collect in the carbon price? How much of that is left to help the states fund adaptation? None. Not a cent. Not a cent of the mitigation money is going to be given to the states for adaptation. And again, the states agreed to that at COAG. I'm not sure what they were thinking. So why should we have complementary policies? If I press the back arrow, will I get to your slides? Because I don't use PowerPoint. I think power corrupts and PowerPoint corrupts absolutely. But I'm glad that other people do. What do we do with complementary policies? Well, from my point of view, there's three main reasons to use complementary policies. If we've got a carbon price, this is the point of intersection. For me, complementary policies can do two interesting and important things. You can look to the left of the curve and go find all the policy measures that market failure meant didn't get picked up. This is the low-hanging fruit. Information asymmetry, some forms of market failure, that's what the aggregators are playing around with. All right, so there's two different reasons to get involved in complementary policy. Can they send us to the left of this point of intersection and help us find some low-hanging fruit? Or, entirely different rationale, can they help bring down the cost of these things? Okay, so can we go back and pick up some cheap stuff that got left behind? Or can we make decisions that make this stuff, that flatten this curve in the future? They're, for me, the two main reasons. The third reason, which is unfortunately the most common reason cited these days, is because they feel good and we like to give money to our friends. Okay? We're picking winners, we're subsidising industries, we're doing all of the things that we complain about in other bits of the energy market, but as long as we're giving it to our friends, and your friend might be solar or your friend might be wind, okay, as long as we feel good about ourselves, we conflate it could help us reduce future costs with it will help us reduce future costs. So you want to drop $1 billion on subsidised solar? Fine. It might help drive down the world cost of Chinese panels. And as long as you feel that, that's all we need. Let's get on. Let's spend $1 billion subsidising middle-class solar panels. So there's a difference between it could and it will. And if you're serious about saying our complementary policies should be selected because they will bring down future costs, I think the burden of proof needs to be a lot higher. So let me just end by saying, 2 minutes. Thought I was already out of time. One then? It's fine. No, let's get to questions. I want the abuse to start. Let me just end with two what you might think are quite contradictory points. I think there's an enormous scope for well-designed complementary policies in a well-designed suite of federal policies. But we have to accept some hard realities. We don't have a well-designed suite of Commonwealth policies. We've now got national schemes that make a whole bunch of voluntary actions, frankly, environmentally pointless. My colleagues in the ACT voted to introduce a 40% emission reduction target. 40%. It's legislated. It's in. It's not going to reduce Australia's greenhouse gas emissions by a single kilogram. Every kilogram of emissions we save in the ACT, you guys get to pollute up here in New South Wales. As a taxpayer in the ACT, this offends me. I don't want to reduce my emissions in the ACT so that you can pump them out. That's not the same thing as I don't think we should have well-designed complementary policies, but I think we have to take some things seriously, and we need to admit the failings of the current system so hopefully we can design it better in 2020. But there's a lot of people sticking their head in the sand because they don't want to admit some uncomfortable truths. And the fact is, you know, the ACT's world-leading 40% emission reduction target and very expensive feed-in tariff isn't going to help the atmosphere by a single kilogram. But it is going to take money out of the health and education budget. That bugs me. I'm happy to pay to protect the environment, absolutely. But I'm not happy to pay for someone's vanity. I'm not happy to pay to keep a target that makes some people feel good when the federal government introduced legislation that makes it pointless. So I want to leave you with that contradictory position. I think complementary policies are really important. Most people here spend far more on their mobile phone than they do on their electricity bill. I guarantee you, if you've got a full-time job, you spend more on superannuation fees than you do on electricity. I don't believe for a minute that price is the main determinant of people's behaviour. If that was the case, bottled water wouldn't exist and everyone would buy the Povo milk like I do. All right. Humans make all sorts of decisions and we obsess about all sorts of things. Okay, and price is important. I'm glad we've got one. It's not nearly enough. But the problem is we've built a scheme which pretty much locks out most other things. Thank you very much.